Well, good morning, everybody. It's the last week of October already, 2021. My name's Larry Jacobs. Today's October 25th, and this is Free K-12 Education Talk Radio. We have a nice show lined up for you right now with Kendra James, who is the National Director of Content and Implementation over at our good friends at Curriculum Associates. And we're going to take a deep dive into improving the state of early literacy, which is so darn important these days. And, of course, at literacy, do I need to tell you? You're all educators, all right, for the most part. But, you know, we're trying to get universal pre-K in and all that sort of stuff, and I can't say how important this is, okay? And literacy means a lot. So we're going to have a nice long talk with Kendra about that. We're going to archive the show at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That's the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education. Please go over there. You'll enjoy it. All our shows are archived over there. You'll see the icon. Our magazine, our online journal, which is excellent, which is called Equity and Access, that's over there as well. Flip through it. You'll really enjoy it. We got a pretty new issue up there right now. And there's a link to seltoday.org, SEL Today, Social Emotional Learning. That's our new website. It's pretty good. You can go right to that at seltoday.org or link through back and forth between the two sites at ace-ed.org. So however you do it, enjoy what we're doing, and we appreciate everybody listening to our shows and visiting our websites, etc., etc. Let me bring Kendra on, who I have a feeling is from Philadelphia. Are you from Philadelphia, Kendra? It's Larry here.
No. Actually, I'm from Washington, D.C. I went to Temple, so Philadelphia is my second city.
I thank you, and I'm from Philadelphia. My wife graduated Temple, as a matter of fact.
Okay,
there you go. So I thought maybe you were Philadelphia. There you go. So you're now the National Director, if I may, Curriculum Associates of Early Literacy or Literacy? Which is so important.
Literacy. I am on the team with the directors. Literacy. Yes, sir. That's my passion point.
There you go. And it's my passion point, too, because schools are all about making people literate and making them good citizens. That's a big job, okay? And literacy is so key. So let's talk about early literacy, okay? And I went to Philadelphia Public Schools. I'm so old, I went to school with Ben Franklin. He was just a little kid. We were both 5 years old. Okay. But and this is interesting. We started, okay, back then, a million years ago, we started in kindergarten. There was no such thing as preschool, trust me. Okay, this was a billion years ago. All right. Kindergarten started you out. Okay. Somehow between then and third grade, I learned to read. All right. But what I'm curious about, when you say early literacy, are we talking about just reading, and when does that start? Like, when you think of the term literacy, does the word reading come to mind? Just define it for me in the way you think about it.
So that's a really good question. Literacy is the ability to use the methods. And this is a Condra definition, not a standard, but I say this is my definition.
I like it. And by the way, that's interesting. You pronounce your name Condra?
I do. It is Condra, like Sandra, but Condra. Yes.
Condra,
yes.
And me from being from Philadelphia, I of course say Kendra. Okay.
There's
the Philly
accent.
Because
you know what?
Yeah.
No. You actually say that because if you use your phonics decoding skills that you learned to be a reader, you would pronounce it Kendra. That
there
A
you go,
should
there
be
you go.
Short. But there, you know, the English language or language in general has many nuances. And that actually is part of my definition
there
of
you
literacy.
Thank you.
There's a piece of literacy that's all about the words on the page, but then there's another piece of literacy that goes along with understanding the nuanceical values that language offers. You know, there's a reason why my name is pronounced Ka-A, as if it's not a short A. It's Condra, but there's there are cultural aspects of literacy that change that pronunciation. There are cultural aspects of literacy that give me a different lexicon. I've been exposed to different words, different language, a way of using our language. Mm-hmm. So you can't, you know, there's standard English that we're all learning to be literate, but then we all have our regional dialects and our regionalities. We have our cultural dialects. We have things that have, you know, words that I have learned to use because I have colleagues who are from the Boston area, and I live in Philadelphia, and I'm native Washingtonian, so my lexicon has been infused with all of those different aspects. So I think that's really what literacy is. It is learning to maneuver and be a communicator in the society that you are a part of. And I think at the cornerstone of that is learning to read. Now, you said, you know, you learned to read somewhere between kindergarten and third grade. Exactly.
And I don't know how or when, but somehow it came together. Yes. Yes. And by the way, that was a great definition. Thank you.
Oh, well, I'm glad you like my definition. I'm glad you like it. Yeah, literacy does happen somewhere in that K-3
realm. The Kandra and the Chandra. I like that. Okay. I like that. But go ahead. Continue.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So I would say you learned somewhere in that K-3 realm how words work. That's really what, in my mind, that's really what learning to read is. It's how do words work? How do letters work? How do letters that I attach to sounds, how do they work? Someone taught me that the little thing that we just happen to call an A is an A. And someone taught me that that little thing that we call an A, it sounds like A, it sounds like A, it sounds like ah. It has a lot of different sounds depending on the word that it's in, depending on the clusters of letters that surround it, depending on so many things. And that's really how words work. And I think that as what we have learned to be literate is just that. How do words work? How do sounds work? How do sounds that attach to these little squiggles that we just happen to call letters, how does that work when we put them together? And then when you put them together in little increments, you get this thing that we call morphemes, these little individual pockets within a word that make sounds together, and they actually have meaning. And when I see all these little pockets together, I get meaning from the word. And when I put these words together in a sentence, I get meaning from the sentence. And we build and build, and that's what you learn. When you think about what you learn in that K-3 fan, that's what you learned. And you learned other things. You learned how words work. You learned how books work. That's another big part of being literate. How does a book work? You know, to think about it as an adult, I don't think about how a book works. I know how it works. It's you pick it up, you open a book, you read a page. But, you know, think about a two-year-old. You have to show a 1-2-year-old little person how to turn the page, and how to find the page number, and where are the words on the page, and where are the pictures on the page, and who's the author of this book? What does the word author mean? And who's the illustrator? What does that mean that this person illustrated the pictures in the book? These are all things that come into play when you're developing a literate human being.
That is a very interesting definition, and you just said something. When you're one and when you're two, you have to learn what a book is, how to hold it right side up, how to turn the page, how one thing moves to the next. All of that building literacy. That was great, by the way. I love that definition. Okay, I really do.
So that's
cool. It's a down to earth definition. I really like that. Okay, it's very simple of what it means. We got to start somewhere, which brings me to my next question. When we talk about early literacy, and I know we're talking about trying to get universal pre-K in and all this sort of stuff, which would be, in my opinion, just great. It would solve a lot of problems. Okay, how early? I mean, you're now National Director of Literacy over Curriculum Associates, Conjure. How early is early literacy? When do we start?
We start from the moment a human becomes a human. From the moment a human is born, we start exposing that human to text, to language, to the conventions of language, you know, reading to our children. Everyone tells us that. Read to kids.
Yeah.
But, you know, reading to children is more than just sitting down and putting a book out and pulling a book out and reading. It is, as we're driving down the street, we point out certain things. We point out street signs. We point out that big red sign and the word stop. We point that out, and we say that word, and we help the child articulate that word. And the car that's parked in front of us, it says Chevrolet, and we show that word to the child, and we point to the letters, and we look up at the street sign, and we say we live on Brown Street or Green Street. If we're in Philadelphia, we live on Green Street, or we live off Broad Street, and we point these things out. That's
Broad
the start
Green.
Of literacy.
Broad Green.
Yeah,
I got Broad and Green used to be where Ben Franklin High School was. I don't know if it's still there, but it used to be Ben Franklin High School.
Well,
Broad,
you know, I lived at Broad and Green. I lived
there. You go.
So that's why I remember that.
Wow. How about that? Anyway, that's funny. I hadn't thought about that intersection in a million years. I live in New England now, so that's funny you brought that up. That's great. Just a good memory. Right. Just a good memory. Yeah, but it's interesting. So, all right, with curriculum associates. All right. Where
yes.
This is actually a really cool question. Where do you want curriculum associates or any given company, but you work for my friends over there, okay, to start their early literacy programs? Okay, that's a cool question. How did what can a company like Curriculum Associates do for early literacy? Because we wanted to start as soon as we can, but obviously you don't have access to parents when their kids are born, quite obviously. So when you're dealing with this from a professional educational point of view, where does it start?
It starts with the facts. And when I say the facts, I mean, what does the research tell us that we need to do to create a literate human being? We have, you know, here's the wonderful thing about being in the United States of America. We are a highly advanced, a highly developed, and a highly educated society of people. What does the research tell us? We should not be teaching reading based on what we think and feel. We should be teaching reading based on what the data, the facts, the research tells us that we need to do. And then again, we're the United States of America. We got a ton of research over here.
Yes, we are.
So what does that research say? There are things that we know we need to do to teach our children, our people, to read. We know how the brain works. We have that research, that
science of brain-based
learning.
Thank you. Yes. Science. Neuroscience, everybody. And I'm going to say something else. I went to Westchester, okay, just up the road from you,
mm-hmm.
okay, 40 miles, all right? And my degree was a B.S., okay, Bachelor
mm-hmm.
of Science in Education,
mm-hmm.
okay? And it's very important that you use the word science because too many people think education is not a science, but learning
Correct.
Is a science. Okay,
yes,
that's what we really have a degree in, not in education, but in learning. All right?
Yes,
and
we have to
emphasize, and you can talk about this and we can go crazy about this, the science of learning, the science of literacy, the science of reading. Talk about that, Condra. Go. My friend at Broad and Green.
Yes.
I got brought back a memory there, I got to tell you. Right?
So here's what's wonderful. We do have the research, and we are coining it. People have coined it as the science of reading, and that's exactly what it is. There is research. There is, you know, science behind the biology of how the brain works, and knowing how the brain works, how do I deliver information to that brain? You know, one of the things that I always say, and I don't know where I got this quote from, so I wish I could figure it out so I could know who to give credit. But teaching reading is like doing brain surgery. You literally are wiring my brain to do something that it was not born, it was not designed to do. The brain was not designed to know that an A is an A. I had to tell the brain that this thing is called an A, and when you see an A, it represents a certain sound. You have to tell my brain that. You don't have to tell my brain how to count. Our brains are built for numeracy. Our brains see patterns. They see relationships. My brain right now is looking at two cars that are parked in front of my house. My brain can see two cars. But what you had to teach me was that thing with wheels is called a car, and you spell it C-A-R. You had to teach my brain that. But you didn't have to teach my brain to see the quantity of two things that are similar. So there is a science behind how you have to teach the brain to understand this idea of reading. Reading is a relatively new thing that we do as humans. What, it's like 3,500 years old? I don't think it's quite 4,000 years old yet. We just started reading not too long ago. So you have, there is a science.
Right.
You have to teach me how to do these things. You have to rewire my brain to be able to understand standard American English. And then if you want to teach me another language, you have to rewire my brain to make that translation of standard or traditional Russian characters, traditional Japanese characters, Egyptian calligraphy. They're all different forms of writing to communicate, but I'm not just born knowing how to read English or Russian. You have to teach me that. So, yes, there is a science behind how you teach the brain. And, you know, the number one thing that we start with is, can the ear, the number one tool that we have, I call it my instrument, is my instrument tuned to be able to hear these sounds so that you can then help me make the connection of what that sound's representation, its letter, actually is. You know, in my reading world, we call it the phoneme to grapheme connection. Can you hear, can a child, a person, hear a certain sound? Because when I can hear that sound, then you can more easily help me make the connection of what that sound looks like in print. And then when I see a bunch of sounds in print and I pull them together, oh, now I'm making words. And when I string those words together, oh, I've made a sentence. And when I string that sentence together, oh, my goodness, I made a paragraph. And now I'm making meaning. That's what that trajectory that we need to really focus on. You say, what is the science? The science is, how does the brain take in information? And the science is, what is the strategic, research-based scope and sequence of how to teach the brain to do these things?
And so knowing all that, okay, how early can, and I'm going to say, can I'm going to call it this, pre-K-12 education, we're talking about pre now, how soon can we start doing that? All right, I know you said from the beginning, but in a practical world these days, okay, because we are missing the boat to a certain degree. We got to make sure every kid can read thoroughly by third grade.
Right.
Okay, that's you know, by the end of third grade, that's the goal. All right, and we're missing the boat, and I think the boat, that's because the boat leaves port at different times for different kids. Okay, if
yes,
you're a wealthy kid in the suburbs, you get on the boat a lot earlier so that you're really pretty well versed by the time you get into kindergarten. But if you're a poor kid from a rural America or an urban ghetto or whatever the case may be, you don't have that same opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how do we overcome that? Okay, how do we make sure that early literacy works for everybody? And a company like Curriculum Associates, you're in an interesting position because you have early literacy products, okay, that work. But kids come to you or to the school at different stages. You have to somehow bring them together. This is hard to do. This is a responsibility of schools. Supposedly, by the end of third grade, talk to me. Condra, you're the expert at Broad and Green.
Yeah. So, you know, this is an interesting conversation, an interesting question, because, you know, there are those people that want their children to start reading when they're 2 years old, when they're 1 year old. I am not a proponent, and this is my opinion. I am not a proponent of, you know, of literacy instructions. What do I want to call it? I'm not a proponent of literacy instruction that is specific
and intentional.
Force-fed
at an early age.
Starting,
force-fed at
early, yeah. More than like four years old, I think, is good. Because what
yeah,
I really
what
want my
that,
child,
yeah.
when they're one, two, three, I want them to be immersed in rich language. I want them to be spoken to. I want them to learn the ideas of communication and having dialogue and asking questions and answering questions. I want them to have experience with the oral language ideas and structure. And then I think, you know, 4 years old, 5 years old, that's a good age for me to start with more what I like to think of as traditional reading literacy instruction. You know, literacy begins before I get to school, but I'm okay with 4 year olds, 5 year olds being that first time where, you know, now I'm being more intentional and they are getting more of the kind of, what do you want to call it, like the strict academic instruction. I think 4 and 5 is a good age for that. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, at Curriculum Associates, here's one of the things that I love about, you know, my place in Curriculum Associates is we are thinking about, and I go back to it, what are the facts? What is the data say? You know, being able to collect large amounts of data on kids and their performance and use that data to inform instruction, that's really where I get kind of excited about this idea of where we are with teaching reading now. You know, we have lots of research that tells us what to do, but, you know, the hard part for a teacher is you hit it on the nail. I could be a teacher in a kindergarten classroom and have 20 children and have 20
yeah.
different people starting at different points.
20 right.
different needs to address. Well, you know, that's the wonderful thing about being in America in 2021. I can harness the power of technology, harness the power of data, and use that data to help me determine what needs to be done for which students at what point and help me maneuver my education world, the world that I'm working with these kids in, my ecosystem, my classroom, help me maneuver that classroom more strategically. So, you know, I always say when people say, well, the kids don't know this, they don't know that, you know, they come to me with different things. And I always say, you know, I'm not too worried about that. I'm not worried about it because we have data and we know what they need, and that's half the battle. Knowing what the students know and don't know to inform my instruction, that's the hard part. Now, the easy part is getting my ducks in a row, using that data to inform how I work with different children differently, how I differentiate mm-hmm. the instruction, how I differentiate my delivery of the instruction. Sometimes I'm not changing what the students see in front of them. I'm changing how I deliver it, and I'm using the data to help me make those kind of informed decisions. So, it is a lot of work. I will say, you know, I was a teacher many, many years ago.
Oh, yeah.
It is definitely a lot of work, but I believe that the optimistic part of me, I believe that it is doable, and I believe that we are primed and very fortunate to be where we are right now in this time in history that we have technology to be on our side, to use that power to help us figure these things out.
And that is a great point. I got to ask something. You'll like this question, okay? Where are we? And again, we have the tools now. You can use your own company, Curriculum Associates. We have the technology that allows us to work, personalized education, et cetera. But I'm curious, because you're working with teachers all the time. Okay, you're working with young kids all the time. Where are we on teacher, not professional development? I'm going to talk about that in a minute, but literally the 4 years of teacher education. How are we in teaching them how to teach kids to read? How are we on that?
You know,
how the college is doing? That's basically what I'm asking. Yeah.
Yes, I get the question, and I want to tread the waters very lightly because I don't want to insult anyone. But there is data that talks about the percentage of states that require their teachers to be educated, licensed, certified, whatever you want to call it, in early literacy, in reading, teaching reading in particular. And, you know, if I remember that graph that I'm thinking about, that data is very low. It's something like only 13%. Or if I'm correct, I could be wrong, but it's like 13% of our 50 states require teachers to be reading teachers. Now, when you think about it, every teacher, pre-K-12, is a reading teacher.
Well, they should be.
So,
they should be. They're not. They
so,
should be.
Yes. It's probably a good idea.
I agree.
That, you know, all of our teachers have a very good understanding of how to teach reading. Because when I'm a, let's just hypothetically say, I am a seventh grade teacher and I teach social studies. I teach ancient civilizations in seventh grade. The student who can't read the seventh grade ancient civilizations textbook, here's my mantra. Lower level readers are not lower level thinkers. That child in the seventh grade is
good
thinking
quote.
At the age grade range of a seventh grader, a 12-ish year old child, 12, 13 year old child. So I can't expect that child to just read an easier book. No, I have to figure out what are the difficulties, what is the thing that's keeping this student from accessing this grade level content, and more than likely it is missing the foundational skills. So as that seventh grade teacher, I need to have knowledge of what the foundational skills are and then how to address them to help this 12-year-old person, this 12 or 13-year-old person who's probably very mature but just may be missing some of those foundational skills. So I think that's a long way of saying that I believe that our teacher ed programs probably need to incorporate more of
oiling.
The facts. What is the
they
science
need a,
that
yeah,
tells
they need,
us
they need a little
to
oiling and be brought up today. You know, it's interesting. I don't know if you saw it on Bill Maher's show called Real Time, which is an HBO show. They were talking about the gifted program, all right, that was, quote, supposed to be eliminated completely in New York City, okay? And the reason they were going to eliminate it, the reason they were going to eliminate it was because, although I'm going to have to make up these numbers, let's say 65% of the kids are black or Latino, okay? Only 13%. Of the kids in the gifted program were black or Latino. So that was, you know, a bad seesaw, so to speak. So they were to make things more equal, they were going to, quote, eliminate the gifted program. And one of the guests, actually it was John McWhorter, the African-American writer for the New York Times, he said that's the wrong way to approach it. He said, you don't eliminate the program. You figure out what's wrong with the program, why you're not reaching the black and Latino kids. The problem isn't the program.
Right.
The problem is the people running the program not being able to figure out what they're doing wrong. And that's exactly what you just said. Yeah, that's exactly what you just said.
Now, I don't want any of your listeners to think that I'm disparaging our American higher ed programs. I'm not. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that, and here's the thing. I have an MA in education and teaching, early literacy.
Yes.
And when I got that degree many, many years ago in the 90s. And, you know, when I think about it, I only had one course during the course of a 60-credit program that was around reading. And it was a survey of different strategies to teach reading, but it wasn't a course on how to teach reading.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I know. Now, here's what's interesting. When I was teaching, the paradigm that was being used in this, I taught here in D.C. public schools, the paradigm at that time was a whole language curriculum. But I tend to, and a lot of us do this, I taught my kindergartners how to read the way that I learned how to read. I learned how to read in a very traditional phonetics-based decoding manner, strategy, program.
Yep, yep.
I went to Catholic school. I had a nun, Sister Marie Damien, was my first grade teacher, you know, and she taught me how to read. And you talked about how you didn't go to pre-K. Well, I didn't go to kindergarten. I just went straight to first grade. And first grade, Sister Marie Damien sat down with me and other kids in our room, and she taught us sounds and letters and how to attach those letters to sounds. And the very first word that she helped all of us be able to read and write was our name. So, you know, when you say, you know, what do we need our need to happen? We need the people that are in front of the people that will be taking care of us, and that's the children. The children in the rooms are the ones who will be taking care of us pretty soon. We need those teachers to have knowledge of what does it really take? What are the facts? What does the research say needs to happen? And then what does that research look like in practice? How do I literally sit down with a group of 5-6-year-old kids and break down what I do every day? Every day in my life, I read something, and I do it naturally. I do it without even thinking. Well, it's actually a very intricate, very complex cognitive process that my brain is going through. And as a teacher, part of what I need to do with my kids is to sit down and unpack the complexities in that process. And teach, this is the research says it, teach the simplest skills first and layer those skills on. But teachers, and not to their own, you know, in defense of teachers, if they weren't told this themselves, if they weren't taught to look at words as machines and figure out how this machine works, how do words work? You know, some people call them rules. I call them patterns. You know, there are patterns in the English language, and I can understand those patterns. I can understand why in this word A sounds like A, but in another word A sounds like A. There's patterns behind that. If I can figure out and learn those patterns, I can apply it to bigger words, more complex words. But if no one ever taught me as a teacher how to unpack that process for my students, it would be natural that I wouldn't do it. So and now, like I said, when I taught reading, I taught it the way I learned how to read because that's what makes sense to me. But, you know, for a long time, we were using a different paradigm that wasn't really based on the science, wasn't based on the research. And I think a lot of ed programs, and I know my ed program in particular, I won't name my school, but they catered to the needs of the school district that they were servicing. I live in D.C. The people that went to my teacher ed grad program,
most of them
they
wound up in
would
DC schools.
Filter out into D.C. schools and Maryland schools and Virginia schools. And at that time, everybody was thinking whole language. Everybody was thinking balanced literacy.
Interesting.
So
That's
they
an interesting
educated
point.
Us in the trend that the school districts were asking of the teachers. The unfortunate thing is that trend was not necessarily the research that has proven to teach our babies how to read.
And you know, that's very interesting that you said that, because I've always kind of been an advocate of, you know, making sure that teacher candidates, if you're in, like in Westchester, most of the kids taught in Pennsylvania schools, okay? So therefore, that the kids, that I and other teacher candidates were taught the ways of the Pennsylvania schools. But you're exactly right. Although I've always kind of advocated that, the point is it's really up to the teacher colleges to expose future teachers to new ways of thinking. Okay? Because otherwise,
I would agree with that.
Constantly inspired. That's a very interesting point. Okay, that you just made. I have to say something else, and this goes back to like Curriculum Associates, okay, your company. With teacher education the way it is, a lot of teaching, the methods of teaching kids or the ways we're going to teach them, the tools, whatever, falls on the industry. Okay, Curriculum Associates, and I'm the big advocate we are here of industry voice, because a lot of people just see the industry as a sales rep who comes to the town.
Right.
Oh, okay. But that's not what the industry is. The industry is people like you who sit all day, really, and think about this stuff and work together with a team, okay, to create the right product, okay, after talking to educators about what they need. And I've always said, you'll laugh at this, Kendra, but I've always said the one thing the schools of education are missing is a course where they start to invite the industry in and let the industry talk to these kids, and not just curriculum associates, but 5 or 6, 10 companies, and come in and say how they.
That's a very good idea.
You know, and it never happens. It never happens. Okay, and I doubt if it
you
ever
can make
will.
It
but
I think you're.
I don't know if I can
happen.
Or not. I think it's just a great idea, though. And, you know, and I'll tell you why. And this isn't just because you were there. You know, and everybody knows this. I mean, Curriculum Associates, as an example, is a well-respected company. And the expertise that goes in there, the teachers know it works. And I could say that for a number of companies.
Yeah.
You guys would not hesitate to do that either. Okay? And take that expertise and bring it into the – you know, make these teacher candidates aware of what's out there. I think it makes all the difference in the world. And I love your point about bringing new ideas in, et cetera. It's just great. You're not going to believe this, Broad and Green, but we got to go. We got to go.
This was wonderful.
Yeah, this was great. You're terrific. You're terrific. Even though you spell your – I pronounce your name Condra, not Kandra, like I would.
Yeah. Well, Condra. I appreciate Condra. This opportunity. This was a great conversation. We'll have to continue this conversation down in Philadelphia over a cheesesteak.
I was just going to say to you, I want you, instead of walking out your door and turning north towards Cheltenham, I want you to turn south and go down to Pat's and all those places, although I'll recommend to you.
Oh, yes, Pat's, Geno's,
but
yes.
That's the tourist. You're still tourist. I'm a big fan of Jim's over at 4th and South. That's been there for a million years. Go there. Okay.
Well, then that's on my list.
Broad and Green. Thank you, Condra. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate this opportunity.
No, I loved it. Thank you. Take care. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. She's cool. Philly girl. Former Washington, but we'll let her in. Okay, Condra James, National Director of Literacy at my good friends over at Curriculum Associates. I think you know how to get there, curriculumassociates.com. We'll archive at ace-ed.org. Also, check out seltoday.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.